What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Mir Lipponi has always been a tech enthusiast since she was a little girl. Mir came across Bitcoin in 2012 while at university, studying communication and linguistics, combined with a double major in musicology. Mir innately understood Bitcoin's disruptive potential and became an active supporter. She went on to co-found the BHB Network Initiative to connect Bitcoin experts with financial incumbents, and she organizes the largest monthly Bitcoin meetups in Europe via the Bitcoin Milan Meetup Group. Mir has also been teaching vocal technique and public speaking for over 10 years. She was the CEO of Satoshi Design, a partner company of Bitcoin Valley, and is still a partner on Bitcoin-only projects. She has contributed to many important Bitcoin projects through the BHB network and has given talks at Baltic Honey Badger, Understanding Bitcoin, and Unconfiscatable. In July 2020, she started a project on Instagram about multipotentiality and polymathy, with the specific goal to increase awareness around the topic. Mir is the cypherpunk godmother of Italy's Bitcoin community. Welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. How are you?
Fine. I'm laughing. I love that definition. It's so powerful. I'm not a cypherpunk at all, but I could be a godmother. Yes, definitely Italian.
Well, I think you're definitely connected in the Bitcoin Europe scene, just in terms of your involvement with the BHB network, the projects you've been on. But I would love to really hear about the history of that organization and network and your experience with it.
Well, you have to imagine that during those years, we basically know each other. So I came across all the cypherpunks, and it was an historical moment for me, because we organized, along with Giacomo Zucco, my husband, a lot of things at BHB Network. Before it was called Blockchain Lab, but BHB Network, it was the second name. But basically, we have this lab in Milan where we tried to cover this asymmetry between incumbents, banks, and clients who want to know about Bitcoin, but information wasn't good at all, with the real people who were really working on the protocol and on the apps. And we were trying to, in some way, to cover this gap, but also trying to give money to devs and Bitcoin. So our main goal was to really finance all the projects we loved. So basically, it was amazing, because we invited people to come with us and to work with us in a very open source and transparent and very spontaneous way. And I love to say always that the most important conversation and project happened just in front of pizza, limoncello, and Italian food, because you can stay at the office all the time, but the most important aha moments and the most important innovation happened during this free time that we had together, because the magic was meeting together in a place. And it's something that I'm really thinking about nowadays, because now it's impossible. Something like that couldn't be possible anymore. And there's something incredible when you put so many brains, so many ideas all together in the same place, talking and discussing, sometimes arguing with each other, and trying to do the best for Bitcoin. It's something that are not easy replicable with technology, just like we are living in this moment. Technology is great, we know about that, but I don't know, there is something more when you meet this is the reason why I missing the conferences, Bitcoin conferences so much, because there was something more happening all the time, and I'm looking forward to start again going there. So you have to think that Blockchain Lab was in Milan, but funny thing is that Milan is the second city of Italy and not such an important place in Europe, but something curious happened that Giacomo and Lorenz Nahum, Riccardo Casatta, and other people from north of Italy, from the Bitcoin Valley, were in Milan. So basically, there were also Gabriele Domenichini, who is an important Bitcoin investor. We all been in Italy all together around Milan. So it was a great concentration of Bitcoin-focused people. So it was kind of natural to start something there. And after some time, people from all over the world came there, especially devs, but also business people. And so I have to say with a lot of pride that I have seen the history of Bitcoin sometimes in front of my eyes, just like when the Bolt protocol for Lightning happened in our office. And at the beginning, it was called the Milan protocol, because all the people who were working on Lightning, they were finally together to try to find the right specification for Lightning. It was incredible to see something like that happening. And for me nowadays, watching Lightning Network working, it's something that I really care about, because I've seen the beginning of many things. So for example, or open timestamps between Peter Todd and Riccardo Casata and other things. So for example, we were hearing all the news about USF and other moments, just like you're seeing the devs taking a position, one position or the other, all the Bitcoin wars. We fought for Bitcoin. So I'm very proud to say that in some way we have done our part to help the Bitcoin development, and we have done our part to help fighting for these wars.
Sure. I got a lot of questions about the initiative here, from kind of just unwrap what you've said. So when dealing with like incumbents, like what do you mean by incumbents in this situation? Yeah, what is an incumbent and what would be of interest to them in their connection to the initiative?
Well, funny thing is that our main sponsor was Intesa San Paolo, which is the biggest bank in Italy. So basically, everything was paid by Intesa San Paolo, because they didn't have the right information about Bitcoin. They couldn't Google it. They couldn't use universities. They couldn't use consultants. They needed us. They needed cypherpunks, or we were the proxy between the cypherpunks and the bank. So it was very, very interesting. The other incumbents were Azimut, Poste Italiane, which were bigger groups in Italy. They really wanted those kind of reports proof of concepts around Bitcoin.
Yeah. And so would they be sponsoring, I guess, sort of conferences or meetups in the term and the ideas of creating educational resources to be fed back into their organization?
And so they sponsored basically the lab. So we had full coverage for all the activities, and we decided, for example, to use some money for the Bitcoin meetup every month, which was open and free for all the people outside the office. And in exchange, they got the research, they got the proof of concept, they got everything there was in the sort of the package, but basically they paid for everything. So, yeah.
And I don't expect you to speak for these organizations or companies or groups, but what do you think their experience has been since that experience until now with Bitcoin? Do you think are some of these entities still involved in Bitcoin initiatives or something else?
Well,
or it's hard to say.
Well, I have to say that things have been changed a lot since there, because now more info are available. And so they can easily find some information.
But do you think there's supporters or accumulators or they learned what it is and they moved away? Kind of like most banks.
They weren't supporters. They only wanted to know how not to be disrupted totally. And maybe some, I hope, smart employee, maybe they bought some Bitcoins for themselves. I really hope so, because sometimes I don't think for a banker it could be nice to say I bought some Bitcoins, but you say something, you signal something, but in the meantime, probably you have bought something just in case, you know. I really hope so. But they are still kind of enemies or competitors. Yeah. It was very funny because we were paid by those kind of people to help Bitcoin. It was a very dangerous model, but it worked very well.
Yeah, actually. If it works, it works. And I was curious to see if some bankers, I'm sure, are going to be open-minded or have been, and or some groups, entities, whatever it is. So I was just curious to see if they were kind of, yeah, but I get it too. I'm kind of curious, you know, seeing what you have and learning and your experiences, what can non-developers do for Bitcoin now to help move innovation? That we still need innovation today, whether there's conferences or and there will be soon, but what can non-developers do?
So that was my talk in Las Vegas last year. It was at the end of February, actually, just before all this COVID situation. So actually, many things changed, but I think what I said basically remained kind of the same. Because in my opinion, the perception of what we can do for Bitcoin as non-devs are education and propaganda for Bitcoin and many good things, but those are probably not the most important things we can do for Bitcoin. Nowadays, there are many people, even more every day, trying to produce great education and great projects, and there are a collection of resources. Mm-hmm. And I was saying before, there wasn't always the case, because when I started, there was only probably something on Reddit, something on Twitter, and right. IRC. So now it's totally different. There are books, there are podcasts everywhere. So of course, it's something I really believe and I'm very enthusiastic about. But there are other things we can do for Bitcoin. For example, I think one of the most important things we can do for Bitcoin is being users and testers of products and app, and give feedbacks all the time, because there are so many things we can improve for Bitcoin in that part, and not many people are doing that. So really using, for example, something that is still very behind for Bitcoin are the UX experiences. So it's something we can really help. This works, this doesn't work. I'm really using Bitcoin and not only talking about Bitcoin. I think this is the most important things we can do. And if we have time or money, there are many other things we can do. If we have time, probably we can start learning coding, and we become a coder, not protocol level, but we can help for apps or things like that. So another way of testing the products and generating ideas and give feedbacks. And if you're rich, probably you can sponsor Bitcoin. It's even better. Sponsor the people who are working for Bitcoin. And yes, I think those could be the most important things. And I'm saying that as a huge fan of education and conferences, but I think we are kind of missing the points sometime.
Right. What about, you know, I guess I got a couple questions here, and just in terms of, you know, if we want to, I guess in terms of if I'm not a coder and I want to work on UX experiences, I guess I'm doing that by using products and reviewing those products. But if I want a sponsor and I'm not rich, or someone's not rich, what are they? Is there something you could do with $100 or $500 or $1,000 to help a project?
I think yes, in some way, because you are more involved and you have skin in the game. But if you are not rich and you are not a dev and you are not very good with user experience on other type of testing, I think propaganda could be another good thing.
And, right.
And I'm seeing propaganda obviously in a good way, because I'm always referring to propaganda as a way to speak easily about Bitcoin and trying to contrast all the FUD around Bitcoin all the time, because I do that all the time. Of course, I can articulate better tweets, for example, but I think the most effective ones are the ones that can circulate, they can show people stuff, they can always cheer for Bitcoin, because we are growing as a community, as Bitcoiners. There are Bitcoiners everywhere, but we are still a minority, and there are so many misconceptions around Bitcoin. So I'm very proud to say that I'm just a normal person, not a Karen, but a normal person. But and many times people tell me, "Oh, you like Bitcoin? You seem just like a normal person." Yes, Bitcoin is for a normal person, you know, and that could be a good contribution, so that Bitcoin could be for everyone, basically, because it's not important. It's not for hackers. It's not for criminals. It is not for that, because maybe at the moment you feel that you're okay, almost okay because of COVID emergency, but still okay because you are not feeling all the consequences of the hyperinflation or whatever. But it's something that in some way would be important for you too, Bitcoin. So it's very important to tell people all the time, the people around you and people on social media, and try to do with your, I mean, being authentic in some way, but also very effective. Propaganda is not for argumentation. Propaganda is for communication, and it's about rhetorics. It's different. Sometimes you want to, I mean, there are threats where you argument things, and there are, yes, of course, buoyance and theses and whatever, but propaganda is all about, you have to imagine something you will put on a t-shirt and this could, or an image or an advertising, and we can be sponsor of the Bitcoin idea in this way, also producing other type of contents, but that one in my experience is very easy to do and very effective.
Yeah, in terms of, you know, education and propaganda, but maybe things that are a little bit more in depth. Let's say someone there, I want to ask you what topics do you think we need more education on? But, you know, and I think other people should ask themselves the same question, because they obviously, you should go where you're interested in. But if someone said, "I'm not sure where to look," and I'm asking you, what topics do you think we need more education on in the Bitcoin spectrum that are important to you right now?
Well, probably, I mean, it's kind of trivial at this point, but Bitcoin covers so many different areas. And of course, every one of us has favorite areas and areas that is there. For example, for me, I don't like all the financial part, because sometimes my brain is just like assets or stocks or whatever. I don't like it. And but for example, for me, that could be, if somebody could explain me better the financial part, I would be very happy, because it's not a sexy topic for me. And I think for everyone, there is a non-sexy part of Bitcoin. The technical part is super, super sexy to me. So I'm always listening to all the details, even if I don't understand everything, but I try to understand. It's really stimulating to me. So sometimes I think that Bitcoin could be probably, I would say, one of the least two things are not very covered at the moment. And one is just probably the intersection between some parts of Bitcoin, between some fields, and like a system, probably. And the other one is one that I really think about, that is communication. Because, for example, I don't like marketing at all. I studied communication, and I think those are very separate. But usually people don't think like that. But I personally think that communication is more artistic, open. But I think also marketing and communication could be ethical and could be important for Bitcoin. Bitcoin don't need marketing, but Bitcoin company and Bitcoin people kind of need good communication and marketing. So if we use the traditional ways, it won't work, because Bitcoiners are different. Bitcoiners are disrupting everything, and they want to create, and they are already creating a new world. So those are not going to work. So we need to find other ways that can really help Bitcoin and Bitcoin projects. So I think that could be really important. And not just like, oh my God, I don't want to talk about that topic, because you have to deal with that.
Right.
As long as with the UX, for example.
Yeah. I want to ask you, what do you think of Clubhouse? And in terms of the question, it's not so much the brand or that app in particular, but the format, which might appear on other apps as well. And are you doing meetups on Clubhouse?
Yeah, I have to say that. Oh, sorry.
No. I didn't mean to interrupt.
I'm thinking a lot about Clubhouse and why it's working. And I think this is because it's trying to mimic the conference experience, which is kind of structured. So there are people on stage and there are people that can talk. But at the same time, you have the freedom of something that is not going to be recorded. So you feel this kind of freedom to ask questions. And for Bitcoin, of course, it could be very interesting, because you don't feel in some way you have been spied. So I always say to people, please don't talk too much about that, because you feel that you are in an intimate situation, but you are not. But in some way, this sort of intimate situation could really help asking questions about Bitcoin, especially for the newbies. So this is why I started every Saturday a room on in Italiano about Bitcoin Q&A, domande risposte, because I really wanted people to get involved and not be scared asking questions. Actually, it's kind of turning technical. I don't know why, because I was thinking something more for the noobs, but it's super technical. But it's okay, because I'm the one still learning a lot. That's my real reason, is to be updated with everything, because there are more technical people. There are a guy who is a lawyer, so he's super updated with everything, because I have to say, at the beginning, when I started with Bitcoin, everything was more global, of course. But right now, I'm moving more on Italian stuff, because, for example, for all the part of the laws, we need someone that really knows the Italian situation, which is very important. And so I think it's... right now I'm more local focused, but because there are so many other people that are helping Bitcoin globally, that I think it's better if I can help the people around me in Italy. And also because my English is not the best, sometimes I love to speak in Italian, because, you know, I have learned English for Bitcoin, so I'm only speaking English since some years, and I love to speak in my mother tongue sometimes. It's
right.
Beautiful.
I think that I enjoy accents of all different kinds. And what's I think interesting is, though, that you also did translating books into Italian.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure was tremendously time consuming. But, you know, even now, I'm sure that, you know, I'm sure more things are translated. But that, you know, what was that experience like? And I'm sure there's still more need for it now, even if you don't personally have the time to do it.
Actually, I have to say that I've never completed a book because I'm always the one who writes to people, I want to translate your book. And then I ask other people to help me, and I'm the one doing the review most of the time. So, and also maybe the introduction or things like that. Probably I've completely translated 2 or 3 chapters of the Bitcoin Standard by Seth Dien, but except for that, my main contribution has been a full review, because it takes so much time to translate something. And if you want to do it correctly, currently with all the terms, and you want to also, I think English and Italian are very distant languages for many things. So sometimes it's very, very difficult to, because in English you have probably a sentence of 4 or 5 words, and Italian you will get probably 10, 15. They are very, very, not very, but kind of distant languages. So it's not an easy task. But I have to say, I have to stop myself with trying to translate every type of articles and books, because luckily I know people that can help me. So at the end, I have done, I didn't actually, they have done most of the work, but I'm very proud to have helped this happening, because for example, in Italy, many people don't speak English. And what is really surprising that they can't read English, because I was the same before. I've started speaking in English just because of Bitcoin. So it's basically 6, 7 years, but I was able to read in English. So of course, it wasn't a big problem for me, but many people in Italy can't really read completely. So they are left out from many things of Bitcoin, and that's a pity. That's a giant pity, and they don't have the time to learn English, because everything is happening so fast. So we can really help people. And also another thing that I have done, it's almost ready. It's a collection of Italian resources altogether, because there are not many. And sometimes the quality is not very high. So this collection could be something I can share with people so they can have something. And also I plan to do it on GitHub so they can also add the pull request, so I can add things and people can help me, because I'm only one. And of course, as many people, I'm doing a lot of stuff, and I really think the only solution for that, I'm great at starting things, I'm not great at maintaining or finishing. So I need people to help me with that.
Yeah. I'm really curious, you know, you studied communications and linguistics, and we were talking about that, you know, you're translating languages here. You've learned to speak English, even if it was for Bitcoin. I myself, you know, I was forced to learn a couple of languages growing up as best I could in the time frame through public and private school. It wasn't easy for me, and I didn't do it well, and it didn't stick over time. And I'm wondering, though, you know, if Bitcoin is a language, and yes. I would say it is, and Italian, you're a native speaker of Italian, but you know multiple languages, and English is a different language, but most Bitcoin material mostly gets produced in English. So I think I get spoiled in that regard. Do you think there, even going through the translations, do you think there are nuances, or do you think Bitcoiners from Europe, even yourself, have a different view of Bitcoin because of, like, and I think of, like, in Europe, time or low time preference is a little bit built more into the culture with, like, say, a siesta. And you know, and I think there is some more appreciation for low time preference, even if it's in the present, but to take, you know, the current day a little slower, maybe, or to appreciate it more. Do you think that kind of changes our views of Bitcoin a little bit?
One thing that it's really, really sad that most of the terms about Bitcoin are not translated in Italian, for example. So I remember during Scaling Bitcoin Milan, they asked us to translate in Italian many terms, but they were basically the same. So what we have created is something just like Italian with English term, just like blockchain or Bitcoin. I mean, they stay the same. So but you can translate that, them, but it doesn't work. It's just like our mind can really think about them only in English. But I think that probably Bitcoin is such a powerful tool that in some way there are, of course, some mental models that are probably more European. And for example, I can think about it. We are from the north of Italy, so siesta is not something.
I would take a shot in the dark, but I was just there's got to be cultural differences.
No, well,
that are maybe baked into our language or just our way of life. And I wonder if,
I was thinking of that. I always say that I'm North Italian, which means I'm the boring Italian because we are kind of cold. As you can see, I'm kind of light, but I can use gesture and, of course, the accent. But we don't do siesta, and it's such a pity because it's so important. I think it's important for the brain. I think it's important for... But if you go, for example, in Rome, which is at the center of Italy, for example, they don't have siesta, but basically I've studied for my PhD there. But after the lunch, everything is super slow. You take your time, and I think it's great. In Milan, where I live, everybody is work alcoholic. Just like you have to think other big city, but I think it's very important. Sometimes, for example, I was thinking about time preference in Italy because. Of course, I'm always surprised because for people outside Europe, Europe is a sort of a concept. But for us, there are Italians, there are French, there are Germans, and we are so, so different between each other.
Yes,
we
think
just like different continents. You will probably... Yes, you can relate, for example, Italian and Spanish. Yeah, we are kind of similar. Probably the only one, but the others are very different.
Yeah, and I wasn't trying to use an Italian thing. I was just trying to say there's probably some differences that, and I'm not sure what they are.
Yes, probably the point is that I'm talking for Italians, but for example, we have the time and time preference. So for example, population who loves to save money, which is very interesting. Many generation they saved money, especially in houses or other stuff. So this is the reason why Italy is not in a default, because there is this concept of saving money for the future generations and for the future self. So actually, I kind of remember when I was a kid, it was almost a crazy thing, the idea to get a loan, to get something like that, because it was seen something like suspicious. And at the same time, we are very high preference when we want to enjoy the little things and stuff of life, just like food or hanging out with people. So I have to say we are kind of balanced in that. I really love this. I'm very critical of my country for many things, but for example, the older generations were super great at saving things, and that's very important for us. Unfortunately, it's not like that anymore. So right now, for millennials and people like me, we are probably the first generation. We are still using the money from the previous generation, but we are not saving anything for the next generation. So Bitcoin could be the tool to save something for our kids and grandkids. So I think it's super, super important. And makes you see how easy a super important concept like that of low time preference is. Not so slowly, actually. It's not a concept anymore in Italy, but it used to be. Yeah.
As I guess, speaking of the first generation in Italy who's not saving for the future, and I'm not asking about you, but I'm asking about your when you are interacting with your community, do you sense a change because of that?
Oh, you mean
like when you go to the shops and when you go and more, and I'm talking even 2-3 years ago, maybe not today with what's going on, but do you sense, did you start sensing a change in, in your interactions in the community because of maybe that notion, whether people knew it or not, knew it themselves?
Yeah, no, no, yeah, it's, I think it's kind of obvious. People are just, it's completely different, probably because I also have the perspective of older generation because my parents have had me kind of later. So, but I have to say that people are spending money because, of course, they are super good at Keynesianism. Mm-hmm. I cannot say it properly.
Right,
they are, yeah. And spending is a good thing. Of course, spending, spending, spending all the time because, you know, and I don't have money, so I'm going to spend what I got. So basically my generation don't have anything on the bank account, which couldn't be a bad stuff because, for example, in Italy happened at least twice during the last years that at some point they kind of withdraw money from bank accounts just like that from one day to another because, of course, the state need money and your bank accounts are their bank accounts. So it kind of happened in Italy. Not a big amount because, of course, you don't want people to fight over and to rebel. But, yeah, you have to think that sometimes you do, if you don't owe anything, it's even better. And that's why people are in some way saving money in Italy. I have to say it's kind of a strong statement, but I think all the people are, they are saving money because they are in some way protecting money in other way, just like cash, for example, or just like doing black market jobs were not so shady at all, but
right.
But they are protecting and saving in this kind of way. But now we have Bitcoin, so that could be way better.
Yeah. You wrote an astounding piece that I really, really affected me and touched. I was touched by, which was Bitcoin and motherhood. And what were you trying to get across with that piece? I don't want to speak for you, but I really did enjoy it. But what were you trying to get across there?
Well, I wrote that after probably 1 year since I became a mother. And for me, motherhood has been kind of surprising and a strong experience. I think it's kind of for every parent. But for me, everything was kind of interconnected with Bitcoin because I traveled a lot with my bump and the baby. And I was thinking that my legacy in some way could be very different from the legacy of other moms because baby BTC, she grew up with the Bitcoiners and a lot of Bitcoin stuff. And one of the first words was Bitcoin for her. So it is not so romantic, probably, if you say that, but it's probably something incredible and very authentic from us as a parent. And I wanted to write her a letter about those years because in some way she could know that we have fought for a better future for her, for other kids, and we fought for and we're still fighting because we believe in a better world. We are idealists and we're trying to do our super small part for that, and I really, really hope in the future for every kid and everything will seem super trivial. Bitcoin will be something just Bitcoin, nothing so special about, just like that for the people, for the internet at the moment. For example, my nephew, internet is just something normal, and it wasn't for me because I wasn't born with the internet, so I had to really fight for internet too, and try to use all the cables and to understand what's going on. I was one of the first using between my friends, of course, no? because I was super enthusiastic about. But now it's kind of normal to share all this information and to help of this marvelous stuff of internet. But at the same time, one of my favorite topic is also to protect the internet knowledge, because I don't think it's so safe. Censorship of all the contents, it's something that is already happening, and it will happen more and more and more and more. So even we take this for granted, even the internet is something we should really, really, really protect. This is why I'm very a fan of projects just like Sci-Hub, and I think they can really make the difference at the moment, because I don't know. I don't want to think of scary scenarios, but at some point, I want to be sure that the books and the resources and the contents that I have, they are the same and they are not being manipulated or whatever, because information and knowledge is so important and so easy to censor and to manipulate stuff.
Yeah. I do want to touch on that, but before that, I just want to read a few words from your letter. Forgive me, I'm going to kind of piece them together, but I'm going to talk to you about technology, about freedom, about changing the world. From where I sit today, as I write you this letter, Bitcoin is still considered a crazy hobby or a cult for weirdos. We all have our parts to play. As part of our Bitcoin lifestyle, we're constantly rediscussing everything we thought we knew. We're doing our best to raise you to never stop asking questions, and we don't take anything for granted. I hope there'll be more clarity on so many topics by the time you read this. For now, this is a little tiny piece of Bitcoin history from me to you. I don't know if it will make any sense to you in the decades to come, but I hope with all my heart, whatever you will be doing, it'll be with the same intensity, passion, and sense of direction that your father and I are trying to put into our lives today as we raise you. Love, Mama. I love those words. I'm really curious, though, since you've discovered Bitcoin almost 10 years ago, and it's a two-parter, but the first part is, how has Bitcoin changed in front of you? So not how has it changed you, but what has changed for you? Like, and I mean more your perception. Probably Bitcoin hasn't changed at all, but has anything changed in front of you or your understanding of Bitcoin over those 10 years that really surprised you or you didn't expect?
No, I have to say that I think it could be kind of arrogant to say, but I kind of remember the first time Giacomo told me about Bitcoin. And it was super clear to me. It was super clear. It was just like, oh, this is huge. This is history in the making. This is something incredible. Stop everything you're doing with your life and focus on Bitcoin. At the moment, I thought that for our family, the best thing would have been just Giacomo working on that, because I was focused on other stuff and I just interested, but not so involved, especially for my job. The potential of Bitcoin was super clear to me, kind of the beginning. But after that, of course, I started slowly to study and getting more involved. And of course, it was just like the learning curve at the beginning. I was like, oh, I understand nothing at all. It's tremendous. Then, oh, I get everything. And then once again, now I'm in the plateau where every day I learn something more, and I'm very happy because I can still learn so many things after all this year, which is surprising and amazing. And at the same time, sometimes I have to say that I was less enthusiastic probably than I am now, because of course, when you say theoretically that big investors are going to enter into Bitcoin, you say that, you believe that, but when you start to see things just like Michael Saylor and Elon Musk really becoming Bitcoiner, just like the other day, Elon Musk tweeting ODL, for me was just like, what is happening? For real, is really using the word ODL, because I kind of remember remember the post, the meme was just like a joke, just like between college friends, and now Elon Musk is using it. What is happening? And also at the same time, what is really changing is the perception from people around us. And it's, at the beginning, we were the super weirdos, okay, I don't care, come on, yeah, you weird stuff. Then, oh my God, I'm so worried for you. And now slowly people are just like, oh my God, maybe, why did you tell me anything about Bitcoin? But I was talking about Bitcoin all the time. Right. And it's really interesting because they are changing, but not as I was thinking. It's crazy to see the people around you changing with Bitcoin. Yeah. But for example, for myself, of course, it's super easy to say I've changed so much because of Bitcoin. I'm completely a different person. And I'm very happy about it because it changed the way I really, my critical thinking, the way in which I filter and understand and question things. So basically it changed, everything in the end.
Right. Well, that was the second question. So, you know, I do want to touch quickly on, you know, it's interesting how you mentioned that we can't take things for granted. And specifically, you mentioned the internet and information. And I'm just curious a little bit more about your thoughts there. Because I agree with you, but I just don't know how to frame it up or to think it through. Especially more than even some of the negative scenarios. But how do you see any of this playing out? And do you see, you know, because of Bitcoin, I'm eternally optimistic. So I just see, no matter how negative scenarios I have, I just see Bitcoin as winning and then helping this other aspect of information also become free. But I just don't even know what that bridge or transition looks like or how any scenarios look like.
Well, I think that one good thing for information is that you can multiply the information virtually at infinitum. So Bitcoin is scarce and information is not, which is a good thing because it's easier, of course, to have a peer-to-peer network and have resilient networks and have contents and protecting contents, of course. So it's easier, but at the same time, so there are so many entry points for us to accuse us to censor contents or to accuse us to using or read or repurpose contents. So at the same time, it's kind of scary because in some way for us, the information, it's kind of neutral. It was neutral, especially if you were just quoting people, you were just quoting. But in this moment, you are guilty if you are not taking position, if you are guilty, if you are, for example, I'm kind of scared about that. So I think it's very important to protect what we have now, because we are in a great moment of progress in knowledge. And if we rewrite things, I'm not saying that it's going to happen abruptly tomorrow, but I can imagine some scenarios. I wasn't so negative before all that happened for COVID, but since the situation here in Italy, since the COVID situation in Europe in general, it's kind of crazy at the moment for many things. I can expect, my mind completely changed. So I was, because of Bitcoin, a lot of more, I would say, kind of paranoid about many things because of Bitcoin, but I'm another level at this point. So I cannot save all my contents if I can on separate hardware, not connected to the internet, just because, this is the point I personally reached.
Understood. What is going on, I guess, right now in Italy? like in terms of how are you impacted? You say it's still crazy, or have things gotten, I don't even know where to begin, but I'm just kind of curious what you can share in terms of, is it more restrictive than maybe a year ago? Is it less restrictive? Are things changing?
It's super complicated. The point is that last year in Italy, basically it was the first place in Milan, actually in Bergamo, which is super close to Milan, was the first Western country where everything started. So we were the first one experiencing everything. It was super traumatic because every day, so we were the first one experiencing lockdown, and we weren't understanding what was going on. So it was more about, I would say, acute stress. So it was traumatic in that way. And we weren't able to do anything, basically. I can't remember, clearly remember, I couldn't go out with my daughter. It was forbidden for 2-3 months. Going out with a kid, and except for going to get some groceries, but probably only alone. It was crazy. So the situation at the moment, it's not so crazy. For example, my baby go to the daycare. I can travel for work. So, but the point is, it's almost 1.5 years we don't have complete freedom. We have to wear masks everywhere we go, outside, inside. And we are always living with the idea that everything is can close. And for example, it's only from Monday we can go to the restaurants again. For months we couldn't go because the number was too high. And we live just like that, always checking for numbers and always trying to understand what we can do and what we cannot do. And it changes so fast that it's really, really hard, to manage with everyday life, basically. And it's not going to change soon.
Yeah, I can appreciate all you shared there. I understand. I guess to turn to, I am excited about what we can do and that we have complete freedom over at the moment, regardless of how free social media, we can dissect that another time. But you have this awesome new Instagram account. In terms of what I want to hear here, though, is you started talking about things in a pop way and visually. And so I want to know what that means on its own. What is talking about things in a pop way? And then what your project is getting at with multi-potentiality?
Well, first things I want to say that sometimes traumatic events just like COVID can grow good things. For example, last year I had many days to think about, and what I've done in those lonely days where we stuck at home, not understanding what was going on, was study things from so different topics. For example, survivory skills, epistemology, anything you can imagine, just to put everything on my famous hardware disk and to save stuff because I was paranoid about the culture. But one thing I thought that was, oh my God, actually, I'm so interested in so many different things. And I wanted to just think about this meta skill of being interested in so many different topics. And I wanted to share these in an artistic way. So through Pixar on Instagram, because I think there could be some good use and smart use even for Instagram, for example, visually, for example, doing interesting content. And so I'm basically talk about that, my obsession of the week. I'm talking about how to manage too many obsessions, too many interests. And there are so many people just like me, which is very nice. And I have to say, probably nobody, because the project is in Italian, but I really hope nobody will listen to this podcast in English. But one of my secret goals is also to question the authority, to question the expertise, because if you start thinking for yourself and you start questioning all these experts, it's the first step when you realize that sometimes if you are self-taught in so many topics, is even better, because you start thinking for yourself, and probably there are many consequences. And one of the most important, of course, is Bitcoin, which is not a topic I go through personally on my Instagram account, because there are my YouTube videos with the interview, there is Twitter, and I talk about Bitcoin all the time. But of course, I think if you start studying and questioning experts, Bitcoin is one of the first consequences.
I agree. Do you spend more time on Instagram or Twitter these days? I have to admit, I'm not well versed in Instagram.
Well, personally, I spend more time on Twitter, because I consume Twitter. I love to read from people. I love the people on Twitter. So there are so many smart takes and also so many memes. I love being on Twitter. And if I want to be productive, just like the last 2 weeks, I'm not on Twitter because I have to be productive. But if I'm more relaxed, of course I'm on Twitter, and I love to stay there. It's a magical place. On Instagram, I consider myself more a content creator. So I create stuff, but I don't consume so much on Instagram personally, because it's great for networking. It's great visually. But as I said, I have so many interests. So I'm not so interested in what people are doing. I'm interested in what Bitcoiners do all the time, because Bitcoiners are weird and I love Bitcoiners. But for people on Instagram, it really depends. For some friends, or there are, of course, interesting people on Instagram too. And as I was saying before, you don't have to think that it's a stupid place of bimbos, because there are very, very, very interesting projects over Instagram too. But I love my Twitter. I'm a Twitter weirdo more.
I believe Bitcoin is for the children and the grandchildren. I'm curious if you have any thoughts on what a perfect Bitcoin future would look like for our kids, because I think we all agree that we want a better future for our children.
Well, probably, as I was saying before, Bitcoin should be normal. Just sound normal. Just something like that, so they can focus on other things. Because we are, in some way, the first one really interested into the technology and the potential. And we love the technology. We love the economical and human implications of Bitcoin. But in a future where Bitcoin exists, everything will be probably slightly better than now. That's kind of certainty. Way better than now. So they can choose to do whatever they want. They can be freer, and they can and I really hope that of course they can think for themselves all the time. And yeah, I think that that's really important, and they can live a better life, reinventing themselves all the time. Because I strongly think that the idea of one job, it's just like a fiat idea of doing only one thing a day, doing that in a sort of a cage all the time, working. Ooh, with Bitcoin, we can have the freedom of a more human life structure, just like we want to do, and we want to create amazing and incredible projects for ourselves. So the other day I was thinking this is a sort of a new renaissance for people, probably, because at some point we won't think about renew something like that. But of course, I'm very idealistic, but we won't think about how to get money and how to work so much every day. So we can focus on culture, we can focus on knowledge, we can focus on real progress for everyone. So Bitcoin Renaissance is something, you know, I really hope for the future, and also with arts and everything that's beautiful in life.
I agree. I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed this conversation and getting to know you. I've discovered your Twitter in the last like 6 to 8 months, and I really enjoyed your perspective. And then even, you know, as I've gotten ready for this conversation, just going back into your articles and your talks, I like what you bring to the table. And so I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed it. Please, you know, if there's anything that we didn't cover or any parting words you have, and let everyone know where they could find you.
Well, they can find me on the internet, on Instagram. They can find me as, if they speak Italian, but also there are great images with Mir Serena, which is my second name, Serena. And of course, on Twitter, just like Mir VTC. And also, I have to say that if you want to go through my YouTube channels, it's full of vintage interviews with great Bitcoiners. And also you can follow my pregnancy, because in every video, my bump is bigger and bigger and bigger. Basically the last one, I'm just giving birth during the interviews, which is super funny to see. But the point is that some of those interviews are great because they are still super valid. Nothing's changed in years. And others are just like, oh my God, those were kind of dreams or just ideas, and now are just realities. So I really loved those interviews. The last one actually is from the last year, and I was starting to do interviews again because the Bitcoin meetup was alive in January. We had set DNA and was alive again, but of course because of COVID we are just stuck on the virtual things. But who knows, maybe in the future I want to do other video interviews, or something that I really love to do with asking those incredible people, because there are not so many, but the quality of the people I interviewed, I'm very proud. I was very lucky to have those people around me to ask questions. So yeah, I think that's probably the most important, and I've always said that the most important things I get from Bitcoin are the people I've met all during those years, because they completely changed my life. Some are friends, some are people I'm still working with, some are people that really inspired me, others are people that really make me stronger because I have to fight and argue with. So I know that we are all about technology, but I strongly believe on the human part too. I don't want to be cheesy, because if I have to fight it, I have to do something for Bitcoin, I can be really strong and no questions about that. But let's look at also at the human potential of Bitcoin, because it's so great and incredible in my opinion.
Yeah, I came for the technology, I stayed for the human part.
Absolutely, yeah. I love it.
This has been so much fun. Thank you so much.
Really, thank you. It was a really great conversation.
Mir Liponi, the godmother of Italy's Bitcoin community, on motherhood, always doing the right thing for Bitcoin, and thinking for yourself, right here on the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. And thank you for listening. If you dig the chats, please subscribe, drop a dope 5-star review, and share a link to the podcast with your friends and family. It's getting a little crazy out there. Keep your head in the game, keep learning, and keep stacking. This is Cedric. Peace.